6 months later, another round of President Obama's health care law took effect last week, and it's still the subject of debate. Democrats hope voters will like changes like the provision that lets children stay on their parents' plans until they turn 26. Republicans believe they'll win votes with a promise to repeal and replace the health care law if they win majorities in Congress. In this hour, NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner on what's changed, how insurance companies are responding, what's next, and the continuing political debate. What changes have you noticed? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Julie Rovner joins us here in Studio 3A. Always a delight to have you on the program.
Always nice to be here.
And we know that some things took effect as soon as the president's pen left the paper, but other things, a big round of effect, things took effect last week.
That's right. This was the so-called Patients' Bill of Rights. This was mostly what was kicking around in Congress in the late 1990s, early 2000s. It came this close to becoming law under President Bush just before 9/11, didn't quite make it over the finish line. So basically, they took most of that law, which was pretty bipartisan, and just folded it into the health law. And these are mostly protections from people against abuses by their insurance companies, if you will, things that people really hated during the era of managed care, which is mostly over, but not completely. So these were things like ensuring that you can choose your own doctor, that women can go to an obstetrician gynecologist without a referral, that if you had something denied by your insurance company, that you could get an outside appeal, insurers, if you went to an emergency room that was not in your network, that they couldn't charge you an out-of-network fee. Those were all things, as I say, that have been kicking around for a while. Some things that have come up more recently, things like rescinding people's insurance policies. What would happen is that people, this was mostly in the individual market, people would buy an insurance policy, things would go along, everything would be okay. Then something bad would happen. They would have a car accident. They would get diagnosed with cancer. They would rack up a whole lot of insurance. Rack up a whole lot of medical bills, and the insurance company would go back and scrutinize the original application and find some very small omission and go back and say, oh, you lied on your application. We're going to rescind your insurance retroactively, so we're not going to pay all of these expensive medical bills. That will no longer be legal. They will have to prove actual fraud in order to rescind your insurance policy. And there will now be no more lifetime limits. This was something else that about 100 million people have and probably don't know they had. A lifetime limit of perhaps $1 million, $2 million, maybe even $4 million.
Which sounds like, oh, I'll never get that high.
Exactly. But, you know, if you have some serious form of cancer or the aforementioned car accident, or this often happened to people with really serious chronic conditions. A common one is hemophilia, because the factor VIII, the blood clotting factor that hemophiliacs take, costs about $100,000 a month. Well, that's, you know, over $1 million a year. You chew through a $2-3 million lifetime limit real fast with something like that.
And as we mentioned, the ability to keep your kid on the parents' insurance policies until the kids turn 26.
Absolutely. That one turned out to be really, really popular, because a lot of people have kids who are graduating from college or have graduated already, gone off, found those first jobs, but those first jobs don't offer health insurance.
Now, children can no longer be denied coverage for pre-existing conditions, yet some insurance companies are saying, well, if that's the law, we're going to stop offering those policies.
And, you know, that's one of the problems with redoing the healthcare system to rely on private insurers. And that's something that they were entitled to do. Now, this was fairly small. It does not apply to that many people. There are not that many insurance companies that offer what they call child-only policies, and there's not that many families that need them. If you think about it, most children are covered under their parents' policies, or they're covered under Medicaid or the state children's health insurance plan, so there's not that many kids who are going to need a policy just for the child. But what the insurance companies were saying is that for this million or so kids who do need these policies, they're worried that if they can't really discriminate against kids who could theoretically wait until they were sick for their parents or grandparents, in some cases, or guardians, to buy them insurance, that you were going to end up with a pool of just sick kids. It was going to get too expensive. This goes to the same problem that there would be in the adult market. This is why there is this individual mandate for adults. This is why the pre-existing conditions for adults ban doesn't take effect until that mandate kicks in. So that's what these insurance companies were saying. And these are some of the really big insurance companies. It's Aetna and Cigna and Anthem Blue Cross that says we were really afraid to do this. And there actually is some talking going on between the Department of Health and Human Services and these insurance companies to see if maybe there's some way they could charge a little extra to try to get them to come back into the market and offer these child-only policies, because for the kids who need them, they are important.
This is NPR's health policy correspondent Julie Rovner. We'd like to hear what you have noticed about the health care. How has it changed? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. We'll start with Belinda. Belinda with us from Rapid City, South Dakota.
Yes, sir. I have an employee-sponsored plan, and my question is whether or not this legislation is going to require companies to offer a better plan. My specific plan, and I'll read two sentences off of this, it is considered a sickness and accident plan that covers everyday medical expenses. It is not a major medical plan and is not designed to cover major health problems like heart disease or cancer. If I pay about $700 a year in premiums, I'll get about $2,000 a year in coverage. This is really pathetic coverage, and I choose not to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. So you it would cover a checkup, but again, that aforementioned car accident, you'd be on your own.
Exactly. And will the legislation compel my employer to offer something more viable?
Julie?
It depends, is the short answer, and not yet is the longer answer. One of the things that took effect as part of this patient's bill of rights is a phase out of what they call annual limits that you can't have. You know, there were these lifetime limits. There are also annual limits that a smaller number of plans would have. They would say you could only, you know, have, we would only cover $30,000 a year, or sometimes even $10,000 a year in claims.
Right.
I think in your case, it was what would a couple of $1,000 a year. These are
right.
Limited benefit, or these sickness plans. But under this regulation that the administration put out to do this, there was some worry that there would be employers who would drop coverage completely if they, you know, they said we're not going to offer any benefits at all if we can't offer these limited, very limited plans. And so the employers could apply for a waiver. So in your case, your employer, depending on how large your employer is, could apply for a waiver to continue to offer this very limited plan. So they will be allowed. Now, in 2014, everything changes. That's when larger employers will have to either, if they don't offer coverage, then they will be dunned if you end up buying your coverage from one of these exchanges. If they're a smaller employer, then they will not have to offer coverage, but they'll get a tax credit if they do. So, but at that point, you'll be able to go into the exchange and buy your own coverage. And again, depending on the size of the employer will have to pay a penalty if you end up buying your coverage in the exchange.
So basically, Belinda, I think what she's saying is drive carefully.
Right. Until 2014.
Until 2014.
Right.
Yeah, when you'll have a chance to buy.
Then put the pedal to the metal.
Yeah. And hope it doesn't get repealed between now and then.
Right.
Belinda.
Okay, thank you very much. I
sure.
appreciate that.
Thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate that. And that raises, again, the politics of this. As you said, the Democrats are hoping that people will say, hey, I can put my kid on the parents' plan until 26. Very popular, as you say. Republicans are pointing out, hey, your premiums are going up.
That's,
so this is all getting back into the debate.
That's right. And even your premiums going up is more complicated than it seems, because most of the actuarial analyses, and not just done by the administration, but done by outside actuaries, say that all of these benefits should add about 1 to 2% to premiums. And what's happening is that premiums are going up next year by 9 to 10%. Now, actually, a friend of mine sent a letter to me from one of the insurance companies that explained why her premiums were going up. And it actually didn't blame the law. It blamed all the reasons that premiums are going up. And there was nothing in this law that was going to make premiums not go up, particularly not for the first couple of years. Everything that might hold down health care costs doesn't happen for several more years, in some cases more than a decade. One of the reasons that Republicans said that they were going to vote in lockstep against this is that they knew that that would mean that Democrats would own the health care system and everything bad about it for the next several years, because they knew there was nothing that was going to keep premiums going up. But insurance companies are, in fact, blaming the law for a lot more than they should in terms of the premiums going up.
Last week in the House of Representatives, Republicans released their Pledge to America, which included provisions on the health care law.
What the American people have told us that they want is that we defund, repeal, and replace.
That's Congressman Bill Cassidy, Republican from Louisiana. And, defund, repeal, and replace. Easier said than done. Nevertheless, this is a major tenet, a platform, if you will, of the Republican Party in this year's midterm elections.
Yes, indeed it is. As I mentioned, the Republicans were, you know, unanimously against this when it became law, and they remain unanimously against it. Repealing would be difficult. They'd need to get two-thirds, obviously, in both the House and the Senate, which seems unlikely.
If President Obama vetoed it.
Right, exactly, if President Obama vetoed it. But if they take over the House, which seems plausible, if not likely, defunding is a little bit easier because they will have the purse strings in the Appropriations Committee, and defunding it would be not so hard. And, you know, they could pull out what the Department of Health and Human Services is doing to implement this, and that would make things really quite tricky. They could perform all kinds of mischief on the implementation of this law, and they intend to.
One of the ideas that they came up with in that Pledge to America about health care, this is just one of them, but this is, again, Congressman Cassidy.
Lower costs for the purchaser of insurance by allowing Americans to buy insurance across state lines. Make these big insurance companies with market concentration compete against one another for the benefit of the small businesswoman or the individual purchaser of insurance.
Now, this was one of those ideas that was debated. A Republican said, why don't you incorporate some? This was one of them. Obviously, it's not in the bill.
No, it's not. And it's been actually a piece of it is if the state insurance commissioners would like to have to allow it, they could. But the insurance companies wouldn't be allowed to allow it. And this has been very controversial. It's been so controversial. It's never, in fact, been brought up even to the full House for a vote. And it's been kicking around for 5 or 6 years. So this is actually much more difficult to do than it sounds.
Julie Rovner, stay with us. And we'd like to hear from you. What have you noticed in changes in health care, particularly in, well, I guess the last week or so, since 6 months after the provision was signed into law by President Obama. 800-989-8255. You can drop us an email, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan from NPR News. 6 months after the health care law was signed, more than half of Americans are still confused about how it affects them. A poll from the Kaiser Family Foundation shows 53% say they are now confused. That's up 8 points from last month and the highest since April. At the same time as some of the biggest protections take effect, more people say they have a favorable view of the law, 49% to 40. Today we're talking with NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner about what's changed, how insurance companies are responding, what's next, and the continuing political debate. Tell us what you've noticed. 800-989-8255. What's different? Email us, talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation on our website as well. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And let's go next to Trish. Trish with us from Nevada City in California.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
We are, just like your friend, also received a letter in the mail last month that all of our premiums went up in our family. I have no idea why. I originally had signed up for individual plans. We have two kids, and then there's my husband and myself. We have individual plans with a really high deductible, and it went up by $84 a month this last week. And, you know, so of course we're disappointed in that with all the talk of health care, you know, getting better. But our concern is, you know, we were discussing whether or not we should call to see if we could get some kind of better plan, and we're afraid of being dropped.
Is could she be dropped by her insurance company? I'm asking Julie here.
Yeah. Well, if she, I mean, the problem is that there can, she couldn't be dropped, but she could, if she went to get a new plan, you're still subject to, you know, to the medical underwriting until 2014. That's the problem. There are still pre-existing conditions allowed for adults until 2014. So she's right. If she went to try and get a different plan, then there's all this question, and I'm sure she got this in her letter about grandfathered plans, you know, whether her plan stays the same.
That information came with the magnifying glass.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, no, actually, most of the letters are going, they're not, they don't come with the magnifying glass. They come in 10-point type. It's just really complicated. And I've seen a lot of these letters because people send them to me and say, can you explain this to me? And it's hard even for me. And I've read the regulation about what this says is that if the plans don't change and if they don't substantially reduce benefits, that they don't have to apply some of these new benefits. They do have to apply some of them. They don't have to apply others of them. So some of these new rules apply to all plans regardless. Some of the other rules don't apply to plans that are quote unquote grandfathered. This goes back to this promise that the president made that says if you like the plan you have, you can keep it. That's the grandfathered plan.
Uh-huh.
So it's a question of, do you want to keep your plan knowing that you might not get some of the new benefits, but you also aren't going to get anything changed? Or do you want to take the chance and switch to a new plan that might have better benefits, but might also cost a little bit more? And, you know, people keep, that's the question that people keep coming to me. And my answer is, I don't know.
So it sounds like this is the healthcare casino.
Yeah, it really is. This year is pretty much it, because this is when you have to decide, are you going to stay in your grandfathered plan with the benefits that, you know and love, or are you going to go to the new plan with the new benefits, but you don't really know how much it's going to cost? And as I said, these new benefits in particular shouldn't cost very much, but that's not stopping the insurance companies from claiming that they are.
I see. And Trish, if I could ask you a question, you said the insurance policies are going up $84 a month. Is that, which is what, about $1,000 a year, is that per plan or is that everybody?
No, that's in total for all four of us. So it just went, you know, it wasn't $20 here for the kids kind of a thing, and then 30-something for each of us around there, and it ended up at 84. I forget the individual. But I was, it was a huge book. I mean, it was a letter, to say the least. It was a huge book that, you know, page after page after page, it was stapled. And I guess I just was nervous about trying to get a better plan and some red flag coming up and then seeing that, you know, we had a prescription for, you know, penicillin and some pre-existing condition, and to lose the existing one, but that can't happen.
Okay, Trish, good luck.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for the call. An email from Christine in Levittown, that's in Pennsylvania. Where can I write to call to get a list of covered preventive services I no longer have to pay a copay for? And can I call Medicare for this? P.S. When I call, the phone just disconnects right away.
actually, yes, if you're on Medicare, you should be able. And you should also be able to get it on the Medicare website, Medicare.gov. If you're not on Medicare, and the Medicare preventive services, I believe, start at the first of the year, the Medicare services with no copay. And we should point out that for everybody else, these new benefits kick in at different times. The rule is that they start on or after the next policy renewal date, as of last Thursday. So if you get a new plan, if you're buying a new plan now, it would start when you get the new plan. For everybody else, it's the next time your policy renews. So
for a lot of people, that's October 1st.
For a lot of people, it's October 1st. Some people, November 1st. For a lot of people, it's next January 1st. So a lot of people won't see these new benefits until January 1st. So it's not automatic as of that date. It's just the next time your policy renews, you see these new things. But for everyone else, actually, it is on the web, and that would be the best place to find it. Most of the new preventive benefits that you can get without paying a copay are those that are recommended by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. But there are others. There are immunizations. There are some from the Health Resources and Services Administration. So there's a lot of preventive benefits that you'll now be able to get, including, and someone pointed out, a very, very smart health blogger pointed out, that it includes mammograms for women between the ages of 40 and 50, which is not part of the recommendations from the U.S. Preventive Health Services Task Force. And that was more of a political decision than a medical decision, but that will be covered without copay.
Let's go next to Frankie. Frankie with us from Thompson Station in Tennessee.
Hi. My question is, my son had graduated. He's 22. The thing is, though, he's still dependent on us. He's studying to go back to school. But they dropped him, and they said that there's going to be a lag time, which we have to buy COBRA until November. I don't understand this.
That's right. That's what I was talking about before. It's whenever your policy renews. A lot of plans, and the president and the administration really urged plans to please put graduating seniors on, to not drop them and keep them on continuously. But they weren't required to do it under the law until, as I mentioned, the first policy renewal date after September 23rd. So if your policy doesn't renew until November, they weren't required to put him back on. I assume that November is when your policy renews.
Yeah,
that's all the law required. So that was correct. It wasn't very nice, but that was all the law required.
Well, the thing is, he was still dependent on us.
It doesn't matter. Right. The law prior to that was that he had to still be a full-time student. It didn't matter. The dependency didn't matter. It was when he ceased to be a full-time student, he was no longer eligible. And in fact, under the new law, he doesn't have to be dependent. He can be off, have a job, be married, and still be on your insurance.
He could be a billionaire.
Yes, he could be a billionaire, as long as he doesn't have health insurance.
And in Frankie's dreams, he will be.
But yeah, the law, the way the law is written, they don't have to let you put him back on until the next time your policy renews, and that's obviously in November.
Ouch.
Ouch.
Sorry.
Yeah, swallow hard.
But at least you get him back on in November.
Yeah, but in the meantime, ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know COBRA's expensive.
Yeah. Thank you.
Right. Bye, Frankie. Here's Conchetta in Florida. My premiums went up and included an increase in the copay for specialist visits. The new legislation was supposed to make preventive care visits without having a deductible. I called my insurance company to see if my preventive care visits were now classified under specialist. We're not without deductible. She said it wouldn't take effect until the next plan year. This is a big word, plan year phrase, which is August 2011. Is that true? So I guess that I thought you were saying it was took effect January 1.
No, it's the next time your policy renews after. It's the next time your policy renews after September 23rd.
So it could be August.
Yeah,
if your
policy renewed in August, you are out. That's the worst case scenario. I mean, no, I guess the worst case scenario is if your policy renewed on September 22nd, you're going to have to wait 364 days. But
let's go to Christine. Christine calling from Tucson.
Hi. I think my question was answered by one of the previous callers, but I'll ask anyway. Our son is 19. He just turned 19 in August. He was dropped by my husband's insurance. We got a letter in the mail. He was dropped at the end of August. My husband was able to reinstate him because they didn't know he was in college. So we got him back on. But my question is, with the federal policy going to effect, I wonder if there is some kind of a cutoff date saying, well, this only applies to kids as of September 1st or something. I guess I'm worrying about something that might happen later just because of the timing when all of this went into effect.
It sounds like since she's got her son back on her husband's plan, he's good until he turns 26 years old.
Yeah, you should be good until he reaches his 26th birthday. And then there's some question about how long they get to stay on after their 26th birthday. That's still, I think, being determined by the Treasury Department.
So I guess my other question would be, even if he chooses not to stay in school, but, you know, goes and actually gets a full-time job, he'll still be covered.
Yep. That's great. The whole point of this.
That's the best.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Let's go next to, this is Susan. Susan with us from Portland.
Hi, I'm actually calling because I haven't seen any changes, and I'm worried because I was unemployed for a long time, and I had to take two part-time jobs to get full-time work. Neither of them offer benefits, and I was just given the new employee handbook for one of them, and it doesn't mention benefits for anyone under 21 hours. Will I be able to get any kind of benefits?
Probably not yet. These benefits are mostly for people who already have insurance. The benefits for people who don't yet have insurance don't kick in until 2014. Largely, there is a high risk pool that began in July, or I guess August, for people who have pre-existing conditions and haven't had insurance. But that's very expensive. If you have to have demonstrated that you've not been able to get coverage elsewhere. So if you're healthy and you just don't have insurance, then there's really, you're going to pretty much have to wait until 2014. There is a small business tax credit that's now in effect, so to encourage more small businesses to offer coverage. But there's really not that much out there until 2014 when the exchanges start to allow just people who don't have insurance to go out and buy it.
Pretty discouraging.
Sorry.
Yeah, I have some health things that are coming up. I've been without health insurance for almost 5 years now.
Ow. Oh, I'm sorry about that, Susan.
And I don't know where to turn. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sorry. Let's go next to, this is Becky. Becky with us from Sacramento.
Hi. I have a 25-year-old son who does have health insurance through his employer, but it's very, very poor health insurance. But does that, according to my understanding, makes him not eligible for...
being put back on your plan?
Being back on my plan.
Okay, this is where it gets confusing. It has to do with whether the plan is grandfathered, and I'm trying to remember which is which. At first, I thought that if they were offered health insurance, they couldn't do it. I think if they're offered health insurance, and you're in a grant, it depends whether your plan is grandfathered. If your plan is grandfathered and he has health insurance, then he can't get back on. But if your plan is not grandfathered and he has health insurance, then he can. But if he's already 25, I'm not sure what the implications would be for him getting back on if he were to get back on your plan, and then when he turns 26, what would then happen?
Right. My understanding is that he cannot get it now just because he has one offered to him at work, even though it pays only like 50% of, you know, that humongous number that no insurance company pays of cost.
Yeah, as I say, that has to do with the status of your plan, whether your plan is grandfathered or not.
So check it for whiskers.
Okay, and will the new plans, I mean, will we be able to buy exchange plans if we have a bad insurance plan offered to our employer?
Not necessarily. That's another big issue about who the exchanges will be open to. It depends, again, on the size of your insurer. But most people will not actually be able, at least initially, the exchanges will not be open to people unless they're in small businesses.
Becky, okay. Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. We're talking with NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email question. This is from Diane in Spearfish, South Dakota. I'm covered under my husband's plan at his work. He works for a global mining company. I understand his company's plan is considered self-insured. Therefore, they do not have to offer coverage for children until the age of 26. Self-insured companies are not required to provide this feature under health reform?
Mm-mm. No, that's not true. I mean, that's just a self-insured ERISA plan. But this covers ERISA plans. They do have to abide by these rules. There are the people who got caught by this who didn't have to abide by this are the people in TRICARE, one of the military plans, who were so anxious to be excluded from all of this that they got themselves excluded from all of these new rules, and then suddenly came clamoring back to complain because suddenly their kids who were aged 22 to 26 weren't being covered.
So, be careful what you ask for.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's see if we can go next to this is. Barbara with us from Narragansett in Rhode Island.
Hi. My husband's a federal employee, and we received a letter last week from Blue Cross, which is probably the only insurer in the state, that they were not going to provide coverage for federal employees at that. You know, we have to go to open season and then select some other program. Is our company doing this, dropping a whole bunch of people because they don't want to insure them?
You mean they're going to stop providing coverage in the state, or
for federal employees? Correct.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. I mean, companies do. Although I don't know that did they say it was because of the new law, or
they didn't say. They just say effective. You know, with open season, you must select another coverage, and Blue Cross Blue Shield is practically the only insurer in the state. We would have to go with a national plan, but. I was surprised to see it because there's so many people, federal employees, are covered by Blue Cross in the state.
Yeah, I had not heard that.
The letter was out last week.
Yeah, I was not aware that they were leaving
We're a little state.
Yeah, that I know.
Federal government is a large employer, though.
Yes, they are.
It is.
And there are
it
many
is.
Health plans in the federal benefits plan.
Pass that on. Is that something that's happening?
I will look into that.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
And
finally, Julie, we've talked a little bit about the politics of this before. We mentioned some of those polls that have been done. One of them is about the general popularity of the health care reform. This could play a part in November as people consider that. And the numbers are pretty interesting.
Yes, they are. You know, one thing it should bear saying that for all the focus on this year, healthcare is not really up towards the top of people's voting issues. The economy is playing a much, much, much larger role. But one of the interesting things, as much as the Republicans are trying to make hay out of the people's discontent with this law, you know, was this poll by the Associated Press over the weekend that found that four in ten people say that they think this law didn't go far enough, which is twice as many people who think that the law went too far. So there's actually a fair number of people who wish that the law had done more. So there really is a lot of very mixed opinion about what this does. And I think really what's important here is that the healthcare system is so complex, and I think we've seen that just from the questions. It affects everybody differently. People are still confused because it's inherently confusing.
Julie Rovner, thanks very much for helping us lose a little bit of that confusion. Anyway, we appreciate your time.
We'll keep at it.
NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner with us here in Studio 3A. Coming up, the decline of the American dream. What does that phrase mean to you? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Gregory Rodriguez will join us on the opinion page next. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.